The Public Safety Finance Division will come to order, and members, we hopefully can get through this rather rapidly. You ask people to please turn their cell phones down, or, no, not down, off. Okay, I am going to have staff actually walk through the spreadsheet as well as the bill and highlight a few particular things for you, but let me just say that at the start that we had the unenviable task of trying to cut $36 million out of the public safety budget. It's not something that I want to do, and I don't think it's anything that you really want to do, I hope. This is the same, roughly the same cut level as the governor proposed, although we have made cuts in some different areas. And I just want to highlight a few and then have Mr. Carter go through the spreadsheet in more detail. Just the primary differences between what the governor recommended and what we are recommending to you today is that we have our cut to the courts is significantly, I guess, is relative terms is different. There's a 2.4% cut to the courts from the governor and a 1.6 cut to the courts in our recommendation to you. The other difference would be the cut to the Public Defense Board, where the governor's making or is recommending a 2.5% cut, and our recommendation to you is a 1.4% cut. The others is corrections, where the governor is recommending 0.8, and ours is a little bit higher, which is 0.10. And the other significant difference would be in civil legal services, where the governor is recommending a 4.4% cut, and our recommendation to you would be a 1.5% cut. The fire safety account, we're roughly taking the amounts, I think $1 million more than the governor did, but still appropriating $1 million for firefighting training above their base. So with that, I would turn it over to Mr. Carter to walk you through the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I should also point out one other item, that we did have a TAILS target, and that the TAILS target was around $34 million that we had to meet. You're going to be working off a spreadsheet that you're somewhat familiar with, but there's a few differences. The differences on the spreadsheet is that we are now including TAILS. In other words, that's the fiscal year 12 and 13 appropriations along with this current biennium. So you'll see that you'll have the governor's recs for this biennium, then you have the governor's recs for 12 and 13, then you have the chair's recs for this biennium and the chair's recs for TAILS. So we're going to be mainly going off that the chair's recs for 10 and 11. You also have a summary sheet that that lists the percent, whether it's an increase, most of them are reductions, and it's at the agency level, and it's also at the more detail is given at the program level. If anybody's interested in what the base is, this is what their current funding is. The first column shows that that's their base funding. So, Mr. Chair, we will start with the spreadsheet then, and on line one is the Supreme Court. We're going to basically be comparing this to the governor. The governor had a reduction of $1.467 million. The chair's recommendation is $970,000, a difference of $497,000. There's a civil legal is the next one. The recommendation for the governor was a little over $1 million in reductions. The House is at $374,000. Court of Appeals on line 18, the bottom line is the governor had recommended $468,000. The House has $310,000, difference $158,000. District Courts, here the overall reduction is for the governor was 11.745, for the House it's around $8 million, 7.9. And I should point out that there is, the governor had a line in there, the transfer of implied consent hearings to the Office of Administrative Hearings. This line is currently blank. This is still being discussed. I think there is a bill being heard today in Policy Committee on that issue. So I think this is sort of like a work in progress. Next item is the tax court. Here, the chair's rec, same as the governor, $37,000 reduction this biennium. Uniform Laws Commission, same, $2,000 reduction. Line 44, Board of Judicial Standards, same as the governor, $24,000. Also, just want to go back to the district courts, too. There will be a rider that we're going to, I'll cover some of the riders, and House Research will cover the others, but saying that the drug courts shall not be reduced. The next, or then we have the Public Defense Board. Here we have, we combined it in one line for the reduction, and the governor had about a $3.289 million reduction. The chair's recs is about $1.8 million reduction. Next is we have public safety. Here the governor had two positives or two increases. The chair's recs also have a reduction in all of the programs in public safety that have general fund appropriations. So the first item on that is the state share for disaster under emergency management, Homeland Security, the $1.6 million appropriation for the floods in the Red River Valley last year. This is to match the federal share, and at 1.6, and the chair agrees with that recommendation. But then there is a reduction. Governor does not have, the House or the chair has a reduction of $86,000 for this biennium. BCA, the recommendation is not for the computer infrastructure there for the BCA. The governor had a recommendation of a $200,000 appropriation. Chair does not agree with that. And then there is a reduction of about $1.8 million for the biennium. The fire marshal, the decision item is, as the chair mentioned, there will be a $1 million increase to their base. Their base, I believe, is $1.47 million. This will be an increase of $1 million to their base for fire training, or as recommended by the Fire Services Advisory Committee. Alcohol and gambling, the reduction there is $74,000 for the biennium. And Office of Justice Programs, there is a reduction there of close to $1.6 million. Post Board is the next agency that, or board that we are responsible for. Here there are two, there is an operating reduction. This is from the central office of $52,000, and then there is grant reductions of $129,000 for the biennium. There also will be a rider, too, that will reduce some of the mandated services, or one mandated service. And the next item is the Private Detective Board. Here, the same as the governor, a $5,000 reduction. Human Rights is the same as the governor, except that the governor had an unallotment in this biennium, and the governor continues that unallotment in addition to the other reductions for the tails, and the House does not go along with that unallotment, or the chair does not. Corrections in institutions, line 127, you see that the governor had two reductions there on line 129 and 130, and the House basically just incorporated those reductions into one line, and also there will be a rider saying that this reduction is it will be agency-wide, so they can distribute that reduction as they see fit amongst the three programs, and that the difference there is the governor had about $2.54 million reduction for the biennium. Chair's recommendation is about a $6.48 million reduction. Community services on line 135. Here we have the first one is line 139, where the governor eliminates the state sentencing to service subsidy. The chair's recommendation on this is one half. So in other words, the 25% would be, instead of the 50%, would be provided. There will also be a rider on this, I think, allowing the counties, or this, if it's a state-run program, to charge the offender and also charge the place they're doing the work for. Permissive language. Operation support, that reduction is in corrections, as I pointed out before on line 130. Then the last agency is sentencing guidelines. Here it's the same as the governor's recommendation of $29,000 for the biennium.
Just a second, Mr. The announcement that I made about the cell phones is not just for the members here at the table. It's for everybody. You have to have your cell phones off, totally off, whatever you're working on out there. I know that you want to listen to every word with this much, but you really need to turn everything off. Otherwise, this is going to be very distracting for you as well as for us. Thank you.
Next, Mr. Chair, is revenue adjustment, and we have the governor's recommendation the chair accepted for the transfer from MinCorp, and that's a transfer from their revolving fund to the general fund, and that is at $1.563 million for the biennium. The chair also accepts the governor's recommendation on the transfer for DOC from their special revenue funds, and that would result in a $603,000 transfer to the general fund. Next, as the chair pointed out, there's a transfer from the fire safety account. The governor had a transfer there of $9.9 million into the general fund. The chair's recommendation is $1 million more at $10.9 million. And then the last is the transfer from the post board into the general fund because they are a special revenue fund. So the lines in the post board just come down here to $181,000. As you can see, the target was $35,923,000, and we meet target.
Thank you, Mr. Carter. Any questions on the spreadsheet? Very well. Then, Mr. Debo and Ms. Pirius.
Sure. Not directly on the spreadsheet, but very much related to it. I just have a question. The DE2 amendment on page 9, line 11, is the appropriation for the Office of Justice Programs. And it doesn't show in the bill there the $1.5 million reduction. And I'm just curious if that's an error or if that's somewhere else in the bill. I'm thinking it might just be a drafting error, but maybe it's somewhere else.
What page are you looking at?
Page 9, line 11. I was just told it was on page 3.
You okay?
I think so. Mr. Carter, that's not a drafting error because of the language on page 3. Is that correct?
That is correct, okay. And I think there will be some changes. That is the 09 language, so there will be changes to that. So they had to cite the article and section from last year.
Thank you.
Blackberries, what else is there? What are all those?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It also could be people's feet being too close to the microphone underneath. If you cross your legs and you're bumping up against it, that also causes the noise.
Sit at attention. Don't move your legs. I think it's that computer over there.
That's it. Nobody knows.
Okay. I think we got it there. Okay. Mr. Debo?
Mr. Chair and members, I'll hit some of the highlights of the DE2 amendment. I'll begin on page 3, line 2. It's a directive to the Commissioner of Public Safety that the final cut should not come from forensic lab scientists. And the next point to make is on 3.6, which is the $1 million additional grant to the Fire Service Advisory Committee from the fund I believe Gary mentioned. moving down that page, on page 3, line 19, there's a one-line rider for the Department of Corrections, which authorizes them to apply their reduction agency-wide. The next rider on that page is, the text of it begins on 3.22, and this is guidance from the committee as to where they'd like to see the cuts come from first, or which programs should be protected from cuts if possible, and those include the correction officers, prison industries, and inmate and educational programs and chemical dependency programs, as well as reentry. That continues on to the top of page 4, and there's a directive there that if the cut leads to reductions in prison guards, that there should be a corresponding cut to the department's operations support division. The next rider I'd like to mention is on page 4, line 9. This has to do with the community corrections. And if the department elects to apply the cut agency-wide and more specifically to community corrections, the desire of the committee is that the legislative intent is that the reduction should be that the locals should reduce administrative expenses and executive salaries before they eliminate probation officers and direct field services.
Mr. Diebel, there's a handout that you should have on the salary ranges for metropolitan area corrections that should have just been handed out. So please continue.
Mr. Chair, members, on page 4, line 18, there's the text of a rider related to sentence of service. The purpose of this is to have the commissioner fund sentence to service programs at a level of 25%, so or the equivalent of that for the locals, so that they can continue those programs. The next rider relates to the prison industry transfer, and I think Gary covered that on the bottom of page 4. And then moving to page 5, section 15 is the necessary amendment to the fire safety account language to account for the transfers. Section 16 is an amendment to the emergency telecommunication service fee. Excuse me, it expands the scope for which the service fee can be applied to include the salaries of department employees that support the program, as well as law enforcement emergency response training reimbursement grants, the collection, analysis, and maintenance of criminal evidence, records, and data, and for any other purpose in the public safety area that relies on emergency communication. You'll see on page 6 that those amendments will expire if adopted on June 30th, 2011, and that's on line 6.34. Ms. Pierce will cover the next two sections.
Mr. Chair, on page 7, sections 17 and 18, change language regarding grants for battered women program, and this would provide that the grant should be awarded to ensure that programs are widely available and should be based on financial need, and it would change the application to include evidence of financial need, including information on financial reserves and additional funding.
Mr. Chair and members, on page 8, section 19, this is a change in policy related to police pursuit training. Currently, they need to do this every 3 years. This would push it back to every 4 years. Section 20 is a proposed new statute related to sentence to service, and it would establish the program. There's currently in statute, this program is not specifically addressed by allowing counties to establish sentence to serve programs. Subdivision 2 would allow authorized sheriffs to impose a fee on participants in sentence to service if they thought it was something that they could collect. Subdivision 3 would authorize a county to seek reimbursement from entities that receive the benefit of sentence to service programs. Again, that's permissive if they think they can. And then subdivision 4 reiterates what was in the rider previously mentioned regarding the 25% allocation from the Department of Corrections if funds are appropriated for that purpose. Moving to section 21, this is relates to the fire service fee that Gary previously mentioned.
Section 22, Mr. Chair, is related to language enacted last year. It's broader language from 2009 on the Office of Justice Programs. The changes are actually on the bottom of page 10 and 11, and those relate to certain OJP grants and capping the reduction.
Turning to section 23 on page 11, this is language from last year's appropriations bill, and it's amended on page 13, lines 9 to 12. This rider would allow for the Department of Public Safety to appropriate the remaining funds in the $5 million grant to that was made available for locals to buy equipment to get onto the armor system. And if they could they could divert that money for another purpose if they so choose, another purpose being specified in the 911 fee statute. Section 24 has to do with the post-war funding. Those are support the spreadsheet numbers that Mr. Carter mentioned. Section 25 contains two changes to language that was included in last year's appropriation bill. The first is on page 16, line 25. It just clarifies that the guidance there on where to make cuts applies to the cuts specified in the subdivision. And then on page 17, there's a paragraph that's stricken on line 24 to 30, and this takes away the hard prohibition placed on the Department of Corrections regarding where they takes away a prohibition on where they can make their cuts, and you'll see that it relates to educational programs, chemical dependency programs, or reentry programs. As mentioned earlier, they're encouraged elsewhere in the bill to protect those if they can when they're making the cuts, but there's no prohibition that would carry forward from last year.
And lastly, Mr. Chair, on page 18, section 26, this would delay by 1 year the proposed changes to the sentencing guidelines that relate to prostitution, sex trafficking, and riot crimes.
Okay. Any questions at this point? And then I have a couple author's amendments. Then I thought what we'd do, if it's all right with the committee, we'd hear from, then we hear from the public, and then we take up amendments. Representative Bigham.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I do have a question on Section 20, the sentence to serve. I believe Mr. Debo said it's a bill, and I was just wondering if you know who, it's your bill, Representative Kelly? Okay, that answers my first question. And the second question is under, maybe this is when corrections will come up, but on page 15, when we're talking about the challenge incarceration maximum occupancy, I know we did that last year, but I'm wondering how's that going? Are we at the maximum, are we on goal to meet that? I haven't really heard an update yet. So I was just wondering maybe when they come up, if they could be prepared to answer that question.
Some polls?
Just one question, Mr. Chair. On Section 26, the delay of the sentencing guidelines change, I don't recall if there was a fiscal note associated with that and what it was. Mr. Carker, do you remember?
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, you're right. There was not a fiscal note done on this. There was a bad impact statement by sentencing guidelines, and then we did have corrections put some numbers to it. And I believe that by delaying it, I'm trying to find it here. I cannot find it, but I think there was a cost of like $50,000 or $60,000 for the first biennium.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. With that, I would like to move the DE2 amendment to get the bill in the shape that I would like. Is there any discussion on the DE2 amendment? So, Kelly.
Mr. Chair, just a quick comment on that section 20. It was brought to my attention by some people involved with the counties that they feel that they do have the power right now to charge some fees, but I'd like to get some more input from the rest of the environment here, because I think there's some different opinions there, but just wanted to bring your attention to that.
Okay. So they'll be coming up, right? Is there someone from, who did you? Okay. So we'll have someone come up and do that.
All right. Thank you.
Any questions on the DE2 amendment? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion prevails. Okay. Let's, why don't we do this? Why don't we hear from the testifiers, and then we have about a half a dozen amendments, and we'll go through those. So, Sue DeSalle, is she here? Or someone from the courts?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Sue DeSalle. I'm the State Court Administrator, and I'm here just simply to thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, on behalf of the Judicial Council and the Judicial Branch, for your support in the past and again this session. We know and understand that you have a very difficult task this year given the considerable state deficits, and we greatly appreciate what you've tried to do in this bill to limit the extent of the cuts to the justice system and the impact that those cuts will have on litigants and victims and the broader public that we've served. So, Mr. Chairman, again, we just want to thank you for recognizing that the work of the courts and the justice system is a core government function and essential to public safety and truly to the rule of law. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. Next up is Mike Kiproth from I don't know if you're representing MAPE. Yeah, you are. It sounds like you are. And Julie Blyle. Please introduce yourself for the record and provide any testimony you like.
Good morning. My name is Michael Kiproth. I'm an AFSCME Council 5 member of Local 915. I've been working as a correctional officer at Minnesota Correctional Facility Oak Park Heights for 26 years. In my facility, we are feeling the effects of the last cuts made to our budget. These cuts have made my prison less safe for staff and less safe for offenders. Our money is already tight, we are short-staffed often, and are still understaffed. When our staffing is down, management uses our staff contingency pull-down list. This list displaces offender living unit staff and fills in behind them or any other vacant position with officers that are assigned to the emergency response team. This makes our ability to respond less effective and less safe for everyone. Our operations cannot effectively work with less money. We have already been doing more with less, and the only thing cutting our budget would do is provide less safety. I want to thank you for the language that attempts to hold the correctional officers harmless from layoffs, and also thank you for the language to continue sentence to serve. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for the job you guys are doing. I think it's great.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Ms. Blyle, did you want to make any comments?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Julie Blyle, Legislative Director for AFSCME Council 5. I'd just like to bring folks up to date. There's a ray of hope out of Washington. The Senate has passed a second economic stimulus bill, and they're trying to pre-negotiate a conference committee report that could pass both the House and the Senate. As you know, the Senate was a stumbling block, but under the Senate bill that passed, Minnesota would receive $591 million. So hopefully there's hope that will come with a second stimulus bill out of Washington. Thank you.
Thank you very much for both your testimony. Next is John Tuma and Ryan Erdman from Community Corrections. Mr. Tuma, maybe you could address Mr. Kelly's, Representative Kelly's comments when you make your remarks.
Madam Chair, members, my name is John Tuma with the Minnesota Inter-County Association. I do their public safety and corrections. And I did have a quick conversation with Mr. Kelly and have communicated with our community corrections directors over the statutory language you have regarding STS. And to start off with, we want to thank you. This is a very valuable program. I think there was an early on miscommunication to what was happening. The proposal, I think, by the governor was to cut the grants states do to help fund these valuable programs. The language, I think, the DOC used in their budget book was unfortunate. It made it sound like these programs are going to all go away through all of the state of Minnesota, and that was not the case. Even if you cut all the dollars to the STS grants, there's a very strong likelihood that most counties are going to continue these. They're very popular programs. They're the program where you see the guy on the side of the road or in the park cleaning things up. And it's a good program. It's a good alternative to sentencing. It saves us money. And so even if that grant program goes away, they will still happen. There will still be STS grant, or excuse me, STS crews going out there and doing those activities. At the same level, maybe not. But we're talking about giving that, you know, a discretion to the local units of government to make those smart decisions. They're elected officials just like you, and they're not going to make dumb decisions. Unfortunately, the result of this session is going to be deep, deep cuts into local government aid. They're going to be possible deep, deep cuts into community corrections. I appreciate the effort you've done, Mr. Chairman, to protect those in your budget. But the reality is local units of government are going to lose lots of money, and they're not going to be able to replace that for another year and a half under the present tax structure. So they're going to have to make cuts. And maximum flexibility is extremely important so that a local unit of government can decide, this is oversimplifying, but the choices are going to be things like, do I cut a probation officer who is supervising sex offenders, or do I maintain the STS crew? Those are the tough decisions they're going to have to make. And so the unfortunate job me and Mr. Erdman have today is try to defend that maximum flexibility as much as possible. This language is well-intended, and we appreciate the effort that's put into this statutory language. Unfortunately, we believe under Minnesota Statute 244.18, counties already have the authority to do these things. And so by putting new statutory language, the court can only read that language as putting more limitations on what counties can do with regards to charging back on STS. Words like non-dangerous offenders under Section 22. I hate to tell you folks, we are supervising dangerous people. Some of those dangerous people are out cleaning up your ditches under close supervision. Okay? That's happening. And so there's language like that can be problematic when you put it into statute.
Mr. Tuma? I understand you have some language for us, and we I can't imagine anyone on the committee would mind changing that. That certainly was not the intent, I think, to obstruct what counties can do. And we're a little bit of a time crunch here, so I'm happy to offer that in finance unless people want to do it now.
Mr. Chairman, I think it'd probably be best. I've talked to DOC. We're worried about just exactly what it's saying, and I want to work with them too. So I think it's best that we work on this language afterwards, and I appreciate your willingness to work.
Representative Kelly.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I certainly appreciate Mr. Tuma bringing this to our attention, but I think there's not agreement statewide here, so we really need to get some more input as to what that language would be. I certainly agree with looking at the language, but it's not a simple removal of all language, in my opinion.
Okay, but we can get this fixed between now and the next one.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Very good.
Thank
Mr. Erdman, did you want to make a comment? Are you done,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just very briefly, my name is Ryan Erdman. I'm the public safety policy analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties. I'm here today to speak on behalf of all counties. I want to speak very briefly on the rider language on page 4 with regard to guidance to counties. That language is problematic in a number of areas. For DOC contract counties, those decisions made are made by the DOC with very little, if any, input made by counties. In CPO counties, by statute, that CPO reimbursement can only be used for officer salaries. So cuts in CPO reimbursement, it's going to be difficult then to not have direct services affected. In the CCA arena, we do have a little bit more flexibility, but even as you review a spreadsheet of executive salaries and so forth, in the grand scheme of things, those are very small portions of our budget. So if we were to try and contain the cuts only to those areas, we would really be put in a box, and it would be very difficult to actually make any cuts from those areas. So just wanted to put that on the table and as food for thought for the committee.
And again, members, you should now have this chart here that lays out some of the salaries of some of the, we're asking state administrators to make some reductions. I think that this is legitimate to have this in the bill, but you can see for yourself. And okay, any other comments? Okay, thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, it's good to be a former legislator right now, I have to say.
Mr. Tom Thornburg from the Minnesota Firefighters Association. Go ahead. We have a little bit of a time crunch here, so if you, the three of you, could keep your comments to.
We will.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ken Prilliman. I'm the Fire Chief and Emergency Management Director for the City of Brooklyn Park. Here this morning representing the Minnesota State Association of Fire Chiefs, the Minnesota Fire Marshals Association, and the Minnesota Chapter of the Arson Investigators Association. This morning we've heard information passed on regarding the change in the fire safety account, and has been characterized as an increase, but with all due respect, the actual change that's been outlined would represent over a 50% reduction in the monies that are sitting in the fire safety account. And without an amendment to that plan, it would be detrimental to the fire safety and fire service community in the state of Minnesota. As an industry, we understand the stark reality of the financial condition that we find ourselves in. However, as an industry, we cannot continue to give more without beginning to talk about items that would force us to give up. Before any reductions in the fire safety account, Minnesota already ranked 47th in the nation based upon its investment in firefighter training. When you consider the impact that the LGA cuts are having on our communities and the potential of losing another $5 or $6 million in firefighter training and aid, departments will have to reduce their staff, equipment, and responses because they simply will not have the money to put qualified firefighters on the job. Further, the chemical assessment teams, the decontamination trailers, and Task Force One, all whom were developed in a shared services model to serve the entire region, will go underfunded. And these are the very units that would be summoned to this building in the event of a terrorist attack. Any cuts to the fire safety account leaves Minnesota ill-prepared to respond to these types of events. On a more personal note, I'm proud to wear a ribbon on my uniform that resulted from the saving of a life that was only possible due to training I received from the Minnesota Fire Service. In closing, I ask you this question. With the exception of firemen, have any of you seen any other public safety agency selling tickets to a pancake breakfast in order to buy needed equipment or to fund firefighter training? We don't do this just because we love to serve the public. We do this out of necessity. Many departments in this state are doing this just to survive. We are proud of what we do and the service that we provide. I am asking that you demonstrate your appreciation to the 20,000 mostly volunteer and paid on-call firefighters by amending this plan and restoring the money to the fire safety account. I'd like to turn it over to Tom Thornburg for his comment.
Mr. Thornburg, if you keep comments. Well, Representative Hillstrom, that question to you.
Mr. Chair, and welcome to the committee. I represent Brooklyn Park, so it's nice to see someone
nice
from
to
Brooklyn
see you.
Park.
Thank you.
I really want to talk about the comments that you made about how the amount of money that we're taking would result in a cut. It's my understanding that currently we collect the money into the fund, and the legislature allocates a set dollar amount each year, and that up to this point we have not allocated all of the funds that were collected in that account because we were not expecting as much as arrived. Then this year, this group of legislators is going to allocate additional money over what we did in the past for training. So in fact, the cut that we're doing is money that you haven't been entitled to. So when you talk about the cuts that are going to have to come, in fact, we're actually going to give additional money. Now, we're not giving you everything that is coming into the fund, and we're actually taking that for the budget, But isn't it true that, in fact, we're going to be allocating more money than we have in the past for training?
Representative Hillstrom, the
Mr. Thornburg.
Mr. Perlman.
Oh, Perlman.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay.
It's my understanding that, first of all, the fire safety account was a surcharge on homeowners and commercial insurance policies earmarked specifically for the fire service. And it wasn't a predetermined benefit to the fire service. It was a predetermined surcharge amount, 0.065% of the premiums charged. The reason that the account has approximately $4.4 million in it has more to do with timing. At the end of the last session, the balance that was in that account was allocated to the advisory board. The money that has come in, that has been distributed or collected from the insurance carriers, forwarded through the Department of Revenue, now sits to be reappropriated. It's not unused money, and we would respectfully suggest that we were entitled to it, that it was earmarked specifically for firefighter training and supporting select number of these regional assets. So the proposal to reduce the amount from the $4.4 million to either $1 or $2 million would be a significant reduction to us.
Anything else? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't mean to belabor this, but it's my understanding that the legislature has only allocated a certain amount, and I don't disagree that the fees that we collect that are supposed to be dedicated should go. But any time we've had surpluses in other entities, that we received money that we weren't entitled to at times of difficult times, this legislature has taken those surpluses. And so while I want to be able to give you the money, I want to be able to give everyone in this room the money that they've had in the past. So.
Mr. Thornburg, did you want to make a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very briefly, I know you're in a time crunch. Tom Thornburg, president of the Minnesota Professional Firefighters. I represent all of the full-time firefighters in the state of Minnesota. First of all, I'd like to thank all of the committee members and other members that are co-authors on Representative Smith's bill. This money is needed for the volunteer departments, paid-on-call departments, but in the career departments as well. None of these dollars are used in salaries, and I just wanted to point out in the career departments, when we do this training, the dollars are used just for the training itself and not for for any salaries. And so we do most of this training on duty, which actually takes rigs out of service, which gives us fewer rigs to respond to our normal emergency calls. So these dollars are crucial to us. I think we're already we're doing more with less already, and to take more from us would be unconscionable in my mind.
Sir, did you want to make a comment?
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Dan Winkle. I'm the president of the Minnesota State Fire Department Association. I'll keep this very short. I just wanted to say thank you on behalf of our 15,000 members for your efforts in the fire safety account. As you heard from the previous two speakers, we are here today to ask for additional appropriations that are in that account and need to be allocated towards firefighter training. And it's a significant issue for us. And in order for us to maintain minimum qualifications for firefighters, we absolutely need this money across the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Winkle. Thank you all for your testimony. The next is Neil Melton from the Coast Board. We are going to go over our 10 o'clock allotted time, obviously. I know there's caucus, but I'd like to get this done if we can. If it looks like we have to come back, I don't know if that we'll have to. Mr. Melton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, I'll be brief. I'm Neil Melton. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Peace Officer Standards and Training, and I'll describe the impact of the House recommendations on the two components of the post board budget. First is the training reimbursement. Per the governor's recommendation for FY10, we'll go with that, it was $368 per officer per year. Your reduction of $43,000 will remove or will lessen that by $5 per officer across the state. Just as a point of reference, at $363, compare that to 1989, which was $477 per officer, so it's reduced. and the reduction of the pursuit and emergency vehicle operations from every 3 years to every 4 years. On an average, that course costs about $300, and it'll change. So you can look at that as $100 a year for the officer. The change would make it $75 a year. That would result in a $75 savings per officer per agency from the 3 to 4 year shift, if you look at it that way.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess I'm the chair.
Turning the cell phones back on.
Mr. Melton, I heard from a police department that will go on name that they would be able to save about $20,000, which is a lot of money if we provided that latitude department wide. Would that, I mean, if you look at it that from that perspective, there are some savings locally. Would that not be right?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. The larger the agency, the more the savings. About $75 per officer per year.
Okay, thank you.
The last section is on our post-operating budget. With the $17,000 per year cut in 10, we already have one layoff planned for no later than June 30th of this year. The $35,000 reduction in operating budget for next year could result in another layoff. It all depends on two components of our budget over which I have no control. That is the Attorney General fees as well as the statewide indirect costs. So based on those two figures, and we won't know those, of course, until later on, that may result in another staff layoff, reducing us from 12 staff members currently to 10. And my last comment is on the section on the travel that you put into the language. I want to be clear that no post staff member, including me, have left the state in 10 years.
Mr. Melton, that language is carryover language from the bill that we did last year, which required that of all of the agencies within the division. Yeah. So that's existing language from the last session. So it wasn't trying to single you out. And regarding your budget, Mr. Melton and everybody else is out there, you will see, if you look at that spreadsheet, we're trying to keep everyone roughly within the 2% reduction. So everyone is asked to share a little reduction. I know you're a small agency, and that makes it sometimes more difficult. But anything else you'd like to add?
No, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Melton, for your testimony. And Commissioner Fabian, did you have a comment? And then we can take up amendments and.
Mr. Chair, I'm Joan Fabian, Commissioner of Corrections. Mr. Chair and committee members, I recognize the tremendously difficult job you have and with this budget crisis, and I am committed to working with you to find the best way to make the necessary reductions. I very much appreciate the fact that I didn't get cut $30 million here. As in the Senate, and appreciate that it's much closer to the governor's recommendation, and also that you're allowing some more flexibility in how to manage these cuts. We're currently trying to manage the reduction we had last session of $20 million for this current biennium, and also come up with the additional $9 million that the governor put in his recommendation. In doing that, we're focusing on trying to minimize the effect of the direct services to the highest risk offenders in the prison and also under supervision. And our goals in, trying to find these cuts were to keep our staff safe in the prison, maintain public safety, and maintain the evidence-based programming which have proven to reduce recidivism in offenders. The fourth goal was to try to keep intact as much of the $71 million a year that we pass through to the local corrections as well. Last session, you mandated the Correction Strategic Management Operations Task Force with outside experts from both the private and public sector. These were all very knowledgeable people, and we all worked really, really hard to look at our budget and actually just finished in February. And I think they were very clear in finding that our department is well-managed, that we're very efficient, that there just aren't great big pots of money sitting around that we can make these kind of cuts. I think as we work together in trying to decide on these cuts, I really think there are a couple of things that you need to be aware of. As our officer from Oak Park Heights testified, you know, in trying to make this $22 million cut to this biennium that we already have, we are leaving positions open to get the money to reduce. And our prisons are really at a state right now of very increased unrest and volatility. And I think, as you know, we testified a few weeks ago, the idle rate is up substantially, especially at Stillwater Prison, at Faribault, because we have, you know, over 2,000 offenders down there and not have the opportunities for them. The other thing that I know you want me to be short here, so I just want to add that in trying to make the reduction for 2010, we are ending up with what you have in your cuts with about $12 million that we have to cut this year when you figure in what was cut, you know, last session, which is real difficult. We only have 5 months left, and that's part of why all these positions have to remain open. And the second thing is, with these cuts, it brings our cut for this biennium to $31.5 million. And I think you need to know that. And I mean, I very much appreciate that it's much lower than the Senate's, but I need to let you know that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions of the Commissioner? Commissioner, I think you know that many members of this committee would in a second vote for some revenue increases so that we didn't have to make these cuts. And as you know, that's not going to happen. I don't believe it's going to happen this legislative session. So these are not things that we want to do, and this committee has tried to work with the Department of Corrections, and I think has been a good friend under both Republican leadership and Democratic leadership. But this is the game. These are the cards that are being dealt us, and we're just trying to be as fair as we possibly can with all of the divisions under this division. Thank you. Any questions? Okay, we're ready for amendments then. I think we'll do, I have the First Amendment, then I wrote to Representative Cole's amendment. We'll do the A-10 amendment. This simply, on page 2 of the bill, the language on lines 2.8 and 2.9 is sort of weak. This strengthens that language up, stating that existing drug courts shall be maintained at their current levels. And I think this committee knows how important drug courts are, and I don't think I need to say anything more. Any questions on the amendment? All those in favor of the A-10 amendment signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That motion prevails. Then we will do the A-4 amendment, which is Representative Cole's.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to, I'd actually like to make a slight oral change, a modification to the amendment. I'm concerned as I reread this that the language "or implement any other measure that will jeopardize public safety" is very nebulous. It's very subjective, and so the incorporation I'd like to make, Mr. Chair, is to eliminate that. The intent of the amendment, of the A4 amendment, is to make it clear to the Department of Corrections that it's the direction of the legislature that as they make their reductions, they will not eliminate correctional officer positions. I could see the department coming up with an argument that you know, reducing the finance person at central office creates a public safety problem because people aren't going to get paid as fast, and then there's not going to be food, and then people are going to riot in the prisons or something like that. So that's the reason that I'm suggesting the modification. I want to make it clear that we're not going to reduce correctional officers. That is the intent of the legislature. That's the amendment, Mr. Chair. I'd appreciate member support.
So would the amendment then, so would there be a period after positions on line 1.5?
No. It would. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. The modification would be delete or implement on line 1.5.
Yes.
Delete 1.6.
Okay.
And delete safety on 1.7. So it would read, the commissioner must not eliminate correctional officer positions to achieve the mandated cost savings. Okay.
So Representative Coles incorporates that language into his amendment. Is there any any discussion on the amendment? I would urge a yes vote on the amendment. I think this is a good idea, and to not reduce correctional officers. All those in favor of the Coles amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion prevails.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually would like to add to the language that Representative Coles put into the bill. And after positions, I would like to orally insert, comma, treatment, comma, education, or reentry programs.
Okay, does staff have that? Did you want to speak to this, Representative Hillstrom?
Mr. Chair, this is just consistent with what we did last time. We wanted to send the message that we wanted correctional officers, treatment program, and education and reentry programs to be primarily protected. And so, Mr. Chair, this is just consistent with last year.
Okay. Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, I guess I just have a problem with all this rider language. I mean, we can do basically whatever we can want to do here and dictate all the rules, and we cut in some of these that we don't want to see cut, but then we tell them you have to make the cuts the way we want you to make the cuts, too. I feel bad enough having to make the cuts, even though we have to do it, but it's a special sting then when we say to them, and you're going to have to make the cuts the way we say. I'd feel a lot better about making the cuts to them if we let them do it the way they wanted to. So not only dictate the money, but we dictate the rules. We're not leaving them much leeway in there. So some of these rider language, I'm just cautious about it. So.
Representative Cornish, I share your concerns about trying not to overly micromanage. I would add, though, that you know you heard the testifiers earlier about guard safety, and so I think what the Coles Amendment as well as the Hillstrom Amendment are trying to do is to say that we don't want correctional officers to be laid off. And then the other thing is if you don't have programming, anyone will tell you that if you have people just hanging around or in their cells all the time, that also presents the safety issues. So the question is, are there more efficiencies that can be made? Are there many other reductions that can be made? Within institutions as well as central office.
I agree with that,
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, in theory, but I guarantee you there's not many wardens or staff that want to see anybody hurt in their prisons or see them escape, and they're the professionals, so I'd rather have them make that decision on there more than us. But
Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, I guess the concern I have with the Hillstrom Amendment is that it's inconsistent with what I think is the direction you were trying to provide on page 17. You were you were getting rid of some of the prohibitions. I understand and appreciate what Representative Cornish is saying, that we ought to provide flexibility to the departments to manage the reductions as best they can. I don't think it's inappropriate for the legislature to say this is our priority. But the problem or concern I have with Representative Hillstrom's suggested amendment is now we're pretty much making everything that the Department of Correction does a priority. And I've said it before, I'll say it again, if everything's a priority, nothing's a priority. And if we adopt the Hillstrom amendment, it seems to me that the department loses almost all of its flexibility in terms of how it's going to manage these cuts. I don't think that that's inconsistent with the approach that I took in saying we should not allow the elimination of correctional officers. But I'm going to vote against the Hillstrom amendment. I understand what Representative Hillstrom is trying to do, but I'm concerned about the ability to manage the cuts.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, perhaps Representative Hillstrom can correct me if I'm wrong here, but as I'm reading her amendment, It's different than the other language in the bill that you pointed out, Representative Coles, because that said that the programs could not be reduced. And I think that Representative Hillstrom's amendment is just saying that these can't be eliminated. So it is different. It doesn't mean they can't focus education where it's most valuable in their opinion, you know, make adjustments, but just says that it can't be eliminated.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I appreciate that. I think as I read it again, I think you're right. I still have some concerns about the flexibility, but I think that pacifies those concerns significantly. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Any other discussion? All those in favor of the Hillstrom oral amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion prevails. Then I have an oral amendment. Where is it?
Page 11.
Page 11. I would like to delete...
It's page 10 it starts, sorry.
Page 10, I'm sorry. Delete lines 10.24 to 11, on the next, and then moving into the next page, 11.12. And this deals with the language that designates the ceiling of cuts that could be made to crime victim programs, battered women's programs, sexual assault programs, youth intervention programs, etc. This would essentially leave the cut decisions to the Office of Justice Programs. I suspect we will have more discussions about this. I don't know that we have all the information about what the new federal stimulus money might provide for law enforcement, COPS grants, and for all of these programs. So at this point, just to not complicate things with the bill, I'd ask that the committee eliminate those two sections. Unless Becky tells me not to. Okay. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, just a brief comment. I appreciate that we need to have some more discussion around this, but I appreciate the amendment, and I urge members to support it.
Okay. All those in favor of the Chair's oral amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion prevails. We're almost done, except when we get to the Smith Amendment. But we're going to take the Coles Amendment first, which is the A3 Amendment.
Mr. Chair, just to be clear, I will not be offering the A2 Amendment. Mr. Chair, members, I would offer the A3 Amendment.
I'm sorry, I forgot about that.
Members, the A3 Amendment deals with what I think is a needed reform in how we manage medical costs for offenders at the Department of Corrections. There was some testimony about this earlier this year. There was a handout that went around that showed that medical costs for offenders in our system are $6,800 per year per individual. That includes chemical dependency treatment and sex offender treatment, so it's not always an apples-to-apples comparison as we look at other states. One of the problems that's been identified to me is that the Department of Corrections has very little negotiating leverage with providers. And when offenders are brought to see specialty providers or are hospitalized, frankly and understandably from my perspective, I don't think the providers really want to see them. They don't need their business, and they don't really. So the department has very little negotiating leverage. What this amendment would do, members, let me give you one very quick example. It's my understanding that that we recently had an offender who underwent a quadruple bypass. The all-in bill from the hospital, of course, the bill nobody pays, was about $100,000. CMS, Correctional Medical Services, their negotiated rate was $70,000, so a $30,000 cost savings, which maybe sounds like they're doing a good job until we look at some of the other state programs. Had that bill been paid for the exact same procedure under Medicaid, the reimbursement would have been approximately $17,000. So there's significant price problems for the Department of Corrections. Members, I'm not sure if this is the perfect way to do this. This would require providers to, they would basically provide the department some more negotiating flexibility. and I would encourage member support. This may be an issue that as we move to finance and move to the floor, we need to tweak a little bit, and I'm open to that, but I think that as we're looking for reforms and way to do things differently, this is something we should consider. I should be clear, this would affect reimbursement rates to providers and hospitals, so members should know that as they vote on it, but I urge member support.
Representative Hosh, then Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Cole's amendment, I think, has some merit and deserves discussion. However, when you're talking about reimbursements to our local providers, especially in rural Minnesota that may have a higher concentration because of a correctional facility, the impacts need to be known. And this is an amendment that needs to be put into bill form, go in front of the health policy and finance committees, and be able to get a larger vetting. I don't think that the merits lack the discussion. I think right now just the process doesn't allow us to fully vet the impacts that this is going to have, and at the moment I have concerns with it.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to echo what Representative Hosh said. We both serve on Health and Human Services, very important area for exploration, but this can have lots and lots of unintended consequences, and we may be cutting reimbursements this session too, and I just would ask that we not do this right now.
I'm sorry, I got caught up there. So, Representative Coles, would you also, we talked about perhaps having a hearing on health care costs with the Department of Corrections still this session. I mean, I'm not asking you to withdraw the amendment, but I think we all think that there's perhaps some savings here. But I mean, I'm going to recommend that we not adopt the.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. I hope we can have a hearing. If I can at least get a soft assurance, I know that things are going to change. I think this is an issue that we should explore. I appreciate the need to make sure we don't have significant unintended consequences. But this is the type of reform, members, that I think we need to be looking at. When we're paying $6,800 a year per offender, that's a lot of money. And we have an aging population within our prisons. We have a relatively unhealthy population within our prisons. And we need to figure out a better way to manage those costs than what we're doing right now. Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw the amendment for now. I'll have some more discussions with you and with others as this moves toward the floor. It might be back. I don't know. And I think we should have a hearing and further discussion around this. But I'm going to withdraw it for now, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Coles. Representative Smith, the last amendment.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm going to be brief and to the point. The you've heard the testifiers on this amendment, which is a rewording of House File 2844, which was also heard in this committee. Members, the fund was set up and is set up and funded by homeowners in this state at roughly $5.20 per year. Our constituents are paying about $5.20 per year as a surcharge paid directly by them to the state, collected in this fire safety account, to be used on identified needs in the fire safety area without it being an expense on other areas within public safety programs, other areas that we look at. I would like to briefly tell you that the additional sums that this amendment would add to the appropriations do come from the Office of Justice Programs, and they are currently funded at about $71 million. There's no reason to hide where I'm proposing to take this from. The chairman has asked for a 2% cut to the Office of Justice Programs. One of the areas that the Office of Justice Programs funds is domestic abuse shelters in this state, of which there are about 23. Of those 23 shelters, the last information I've looked at that's collected by the Office of Justice Programs and the Department of Public Safety and also the Attorney General's Office on Charities and Nonprofits, of those 23 shelters, they had approximately $39 million in fund balances, reserve accounts. Of those 23 shelters, 15 have reserves of equaling more than 1 year of expenses. And in fact, even one of them had almost four years worth of yearly expenses in its fund balance. Cutting or proposing to cut a program that funds that kind of
ability to amass fund balances at 2% while arguably cutting the fire safety account anywhere from 50 to 61% or more strikes me as not being fair or reasonable. Frankly, I sympathize with the first sentence this chairman made when he gaveled us in, and I'd paraphrase it and restate it as that the people that set the targets in this legislature should not have given you those kinds of cuts. They should, in fact, have allowed you to take some of your line items and hold them harmless from cuts. And I'm not going to suggest any, but if I were, it would be the courts, the public defenders, and this particular account. I want to thank, on this committee, we have 12 members who have authored House File, co-authored House File 2844, and I'd like to thank Representatives Olin, Ward, Hosh, Lane, Hillstrom, Haas, Reinert, also Cornish, Eastland, Kelly, and Severson for authoring, co-authoring a bill that would do exactly what this amendment is proposing to do. So I would urge adoption of the amendment.
Just want to point out here that the fire marshal is not taking a cut. In fact, they are the, I believe, they're the only division within our division, or the only department within our division that's actually getting an increase. I just want to make that clear. In a better world, I think we'd want to provide more training for cops, more training for firefighters, more training for teachers, more training for probation officers. I could go down a list just in our own division of where I think that more training should be. We have some difficult decisions to make. Representative Bigham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just wondering, with some of the things that may be coming down, and I say may be coming down from the federal government, has there been any discussion, maybe this is for Mr. Carter or OJP, is there any discussions about any additional burn grants or anything, cop dollars? And I'm just wondering if there is any discussion about that that may be coming down.
Mr. Carter, do you know any?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bigham, not that I know of. I believe the burn grants would be somewhere around $4 million, and I think Ms. Bovera is shaking her head on that. But, you know, you never can tell what the feds are going to do.
Okay. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Smith, can you tell me, this really is terrible that we have to pit firefighters against women's shelters, and that's a difficult situation. Now, there are women's shelters in my district, and the firefighters talked about selling pancake tickets, you know, in the community to raise funds. And I don't know that my women's shelter has multiple fundraisers, and I've talked about it before in here, you know, where Commissioner Campion and a bunch of us walked in women's high heels and to raise money. There's absolutely a need in my women's shelter. So I'm really taken back that. I want to be clear on what I heard from you. Did you say that there's a fund balance in women's shelters in the state of Minnesota? Because mine is going on skins, bones, skeletons, and everything else as a daily operation.
Mr. Representative Smith, do you
Mr. Chairman, I'll ask that. Representative, I don't know which one you have, and each of the 23 shelters receives various levels of funding directly from the state. I think a couple have 100% of their budget comes from state revenue, state sources. Several have in the 90% range. I think the lowest one that I'm aware of is roughly, this is not directly answering your question, I'll get to it, 72% coming from state funds. Some, again, from what I'm looking at, 1, 2, 3, 4 had no fund balances. But of the 23, on average, 15 had over 1 year's worth. So yours may fall in that category where they have none. I don't know.
Representative Smith, I'd like you to, if you wouldn't mind, just turning to page 7 of the bill, just so you know that your voice is being heard here.
Yes, sir.
If you look at page point 7237.24, we did try to address this issue here. I'm not sure it goes as far as maybe it should, but I am sensitive to this issue that maybe in Representative Ward's district or Olin's, especially in greater Minnesota, that some of these shelters are hanging on by by a thread, and some of them, perhaps here in the metropolitan area, may have fund balances that could be drawn down. So we were trying to address this in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I do see that language. That is a good part of the bill.
Okay, thank you. That's off topic, obviously, but Representative Olin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question for Representative Smith. Is your cuts exactly without trying to figure out directed at the battered shelters, et cetera, or is this in general taking it from a line item for a different, for a more major purpose?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it would be no directive up to them.
Thank you.
Okay, so any other discussion on the Smith Amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I would like a roll call.
Representative Smith asked for a roll call. The clerk will take the roll.
Hamer?
No.
Bigham?
No.
Cornish?
Here.
No.
Eastland?
No.
Hobbs?
No.
Hillstrom?
No.
Hosh?
No.
Kelly?
No.
Coles?
Yes.
Lane?
No.
Lesh? Liebling?
No.
Olin?
Yes.
Reiner?
No.
Severson? Smith?
Yes.
Ward?
No.
Vote is 12-3. The motion does not prevail. We have one more amendment. I'm sorry, I thought we were done, but we have a Smith Amendment, which is the A6 Amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I will not offer that.
Okay, thank you. Is there anything else? Representative Cornish and then Coles.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I don't often explain my votes, but I'm not going to pick between women's shelters and fire safety. That's the reason I voted that way. I've been carrying a pin around in my jacket for the last 3 days of a murdered girl in my area, and I'm new with some domestic abuse laws that we're forwarding through, and so I'm not saying it was against the process there, but if you find a better spot to take it from, but I'm not going to, you know, pick which finger to cut off my hand. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cornish. Representative Coles.
Mr. Chairman, just very very briefly, because I know we've got to get over for session, I want to first thank you for your efforts. I think bipartisanly we wish that we weren't in a situation of having to deal with a budget deficit, let alone reductions in the public safety area. I really appreciate, as one legislator, and I don't want to speak for others in my caucus, what you did with regard to the courts and public defenders, the effort to maintain the sentence to serve program, the funding for that. I think those are good things. I think the reform or the budget reserve language that you just talked about with Chairman Smith is a good effort. The problem I have, Mr. Chair, is that from my perspective, I don't have any idea as to whether a $36 million reduction is the right number, because I don't have any idea what the full picture is from the House DFL leadership. I guess the analogy I've used is that I feel like we've got one piece of a puzzle, but we don't have the box cover. I don't know what the picture is that I'm trying to create here. And I have a big question as to whether the DFL leadership is solving for a $994 million problem, or if they're going to actually follow through and solve for an additional $2.7 billion. We spent $25,000 of taxpayer money on a brief arguing that what the governor did with unallotment was unconstitutional. And yet, I highly doubt that we're going to see the DFL leadership come forward with a full plan. And if we follow this to its logical conclusion, where we are headed is significant cuts in education, and I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that. Mr. Chair, you've done good work with this bill, I think, but until we know the full picture with regard to the budget, I am not. Comfortable voting yes, not because I don't think there's some good things in this bill, and that if I knew the full picture, this might be exactly right. But I, absent that full picture, I just don't see how we can move forward. So, Mr. Chair, I'm going to urge members to vote no, but I want to do that in great respect to the work that you've done.
Okay. And any other discussion? Let me just say I'd like to also thank the committee. I hope we don't have to come back for another round of cuts in public safety. I hope this is it. It's significant. It's more than I wanted to cut. Representative Coles, you've been a great lead, and you've been very straight with me in the process. And I have to say I really appreciate the work this committee does because, we all want the same thing here. And if there's no further discussion, then I'm going to renew my motion that House File 1270, as amended, be recommended to pass and return to the Finance Committee. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, members.